The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. We're on Man in Line today, open line till 1. Call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp on 166 177. Email studio at manxradio.com. We've been touching on this recently, the subject of the Local Government Amendment Bill. The Chair of Peel Commissioners says it's solving the wrong problem. This afternoon, LegCo will hear from local authorities before deciding whether to back the keys and progress the bill or to knock it back to reject it. Peel Commissioner Ray Harmer warns that if it's approved, the bill could have a significant impact on ratepayers. Originally, it was developed from a 2017 consultation actually led by Mr. Harmer when he was in government. The bill aims to improve local service delivery and transparency, but it's faced repeated delays and was reintroduced in 2023 with updates on interest, minutes and expenses. Now, an amendment from the departmental member Laurie Cooper, MHK, allows new functions to be improved, to be imposed without extra funding, and introduces new standards for work, a move that made without consulting the local authorities. Laurie Hooper says he wants to ensure parity of services across the Isle of Man and to avoid a postcode lottery.
The one clause that I brought through that was supported by the Keys would allow the government, with Tymwald approval, after consultation, to basically mandate or require that local authorities provided certain services. Now, it also allows the government to set minimum standards, again, with Tymwald approval. But those powers actually already exist in law, so the DOI already has the power to set minimum standards for all sorts of things. So that isn't a new invention. The bit that's new in the clause would actually allow Tymwald to be able to say, well, that thing that currently you may provide, we're now saying you must provide. It. So lots of services local authorities provide because they're required to by law. You have to do a certain thing. Other services local authorities provide because the law allows them to if they want to, which is why you get a disparity. So Ramsey provides a library, but Bride doesn't. That's essentially it. What this clause would do is actually enable the government, or Tymwald rather, to say, actually, everyone should have access to a library. And by and large, we don't really mind how you do that. So some of you may want to provide a library yourself, like Ramsey does. Other authorities might decide, well, actually, that's a lot for us. We're only quite small. Maybe we'll just contribute to someone else's library, or maybe we'll contribute to the family library or the mobile library. At the minute, that doesn't happen. This kind of optional service provision is why you get a lot of differences depending on where you live.
Laurie Hooper, and remember, Laurie Hooper served as a commissioner in Ramsey, so he knows of what he speaks. But the local authorities are going to speak to LegCo members today because they take another view. So, any thoughts on that? I mentioned this yesterday, so I'll definitely do it today. The Isle of Man's Communications Regulator is asking for your views on plans to make broadband more affordable for those who are struggling with the cost of access. CURA, the Communications and Utilities Regulatory Authority, has launched a consultation on a new essential use broadband product. CURA's proposal is for a low-cost broadband tariff that would allow people to carry out essential online activities like accessing healthcare, banking, education, government services. It follows an instruction from Tymwald last year to make sure that affordability doesn't prevent people from getting online. Now, all fixed broadband operators using Manx Telecom's wholesale network will be required to offer it. The service will be priced at £16.82 per month, which is the wholesale cost of provision. So providers wouldn't be making any money out of it. It would offer speeds of 10 megabits per second download and 1 megabit per second upload, enough for a basic use, but not obviously for high definition streaming or gaming or stuff like that. This is the basic thing. One of the key differences from similar schemes elsewhere, CURA's version would be open to everybody. No eligibility checks or means testing. Customers could switch in or out of the tariff at any time without penalties and no contract commitments. The idea is to make it a kind of safety net for anybody who might temporarily need a cheaper connection. Now, Kira says it would help ensure that nobody's left behind as more services are now moving online. The regulator estimates only a small number of households would use it, but it believes the measure will play an important role in bridging what they call the digital divide. Now, if you want any more information, the consultation's open till the 27th of November. Kira says it's going to publish its final decision once all responses have been reviewed. If you want to send a response, you go to Kira.im, C-U-R-A.im, and click on the Broadband Product Consultation tab, if that's something that interests you. And in general, what do you think about the idea of it? Offering basically a safety net at £16.82 per month to go online. Nothing fancy, just 10 megabits download per second, 1 megabit per second upload. Kira.im, C-U-R-A, Kira.im, and click on Broadband Product Consultation. Right, let's get to the phones now. Julian's on with us. Hello, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Well, what a lovely day today. It's a bit breezy, but lots of blue sky knocking around.
Yeah, I think probably the boat won't be quite as rock and roll as the other day, but looked like there was a few cars damaged in that one.
They were still pulling the damaged cars off yesterday afternoon, I think.
Yeah, I think the whichever way round the insurance works, we'll have to get moving on that one. Listening to today's sitting of keys a little bit earlier, a couple of interesting things turned out from that. The Treasury Minister, Alex Allenson, was asked by Laurie Hooper a question. The Wardell Armstrong Environmental Impact Assessment, the Treasury Minister said that they've allocated up to £3.768 million for it. However, it was pointed out that the Pink Book only is allowing 3.3 million. So there's a £500,000 extra on the environmental impact that's been allocated, but it doesn't appear to be in the will of Tynwald, it seems. This is just something that the Treasury Minister will be getting back to this one. So that needs a bit of clarification. And also, it seems that the seabed lease with Ørsted's predecessor, Dong Energy, was never signed by a member of Tynwald, it appears. So there's a bit more clarification needed on that one as well.
And who said that it hadn't been signed?
This was an exchange with Chris Thomas, I believe. I'm just trying to think who else it was. But those are the two things. They'll be available on playback, I would imagine, from tomorrow. So I'll have another listen back. It's kind of, this transparency thing sort of again. You know, who signed that seabed lease in the first place, and also who's, you know, it kind of smacks a bit of the horse tram rails again. You know, if you've got 3.3 million allocated for Wardell Armstrong in the Pink Book, how come it's suddenly your 3.75 million? Because £500,000, you know, every penny counts at the moment, doesn't it, Andy?
Well, apparently so, yes.
The only other thing that I've noticed today, Nature magazine, it's behind a paywall, but it's a report by a group of ecologists who are saying that the effect of utility-scale wind energy production has large and unexpected consequences for biodiversity. And they're talking about millions of bats and birds getting killed by the turbines. And they're also saying, for example, that the people from, shall we say, the green side were complaining about the BP's Deepwater Horizon accident, which was considered one of the worst US oil spills, led to the deaths of around 600,000 seabirds. But we're talking at least 500,000 bats every year killed just in the US by wind turbines, according to this group of ecologists.
And this is Nature magazine, is it?
Yeah, the online one. It's behind a paywall, you've got a group of ecologists who are reporting that the numbers, and they're saying that it's sort of localized, you know, like you'll get, it's almost like a local cull on bats and birds, but as it's spreading and you're getting more and more of them, so it becomes more and more difficult for things to survive when you've got these forests of wind turbines.
Well,
everywhere.
The issue with, obviously, with bats, it's been mentioned, is the change in pressure, when obviously bats are very susceptible to changes in air pressure.
Yeah, the lungs tend to get pulled out, don't they, when you've got that low pressure area when the turbine blade is sweeping. And you've also got it dries out the ground below because it's sort of like air drying, if you see what I mean, which changes all the local ecology if you're doing it on somewhere that's like a wetland or something. And of course, Eyre Stain, I mean, if you look on Manx Wildlife, if anyone Googles Manx Wildlife Eyre Stain, it's a wildlife sanctuary, and there's pictures of hen harriers and peregrine falcons and stuff, which tend to sort of be hovering, looking down on their prey. You've seen them kind of fluttering around.
Yeah.
So they're not kind of looking behind it. Other birds might avoid it, because they'll see it, but they're kind of concentrating on looking downwards when they're hovering, and they do tend to be in that area where the turbines sweep downwards.
And what would you say, Julian, obviously Eyre Stain is a point of contention at the moment, but what would you say to people who would contend that basically you have to break an omelette, break an egg to make an omelette, and Eyre Stain could be the egg that gets broken?
Well, yes, but the assertions about how much energy this thing is going to produce and over what lifespan, if you compare it with what is actually being found in reality rather than this sort of guesswork and amazing figures, for example, the UK government's own website and also the website that the Wind Consortium uses, which is composed of people like Ørsted, SSE Energy, RWE, one of the largest energy providers in the UK, they're saying that these turbines work about a quarter of the time for their load factor, as I've mentioned before. But all of a sudden up here, we've got 65%, which is, it's orders of magnitude in real energy terms. Don't see how it's achievable. And then we're basing their figures for the economics of it on a 30-year lifespan, when the reality is these wind farms are like Trigger's brush. It's kind of like by the time you get sort of 11 or 12 years, the reality is that they're that worn out that you've really got to look at either repurposing them with larger turbines. But the wind farm is touted as saying, well, it's been here for 20 years or whatever. But there was a recent one in Germany that's just been pulled down at 15 years. And the larger the turbines, the worse the warranty claims are getting.
On a scale of 1 to 10 then, Julian, if 10 is definitely and 0 is never going to happen, what's the likelihood of the Eyre Stain wind turbine farm happening?
Well, it just depends on how determined the government is to push this through, despite all the things that the things that I've mentioned, like Ørsted down 92%, Vattenfall, the largest onshore wind farm, losing more than half their operating profits are down the tubes. You've got numerous things going on here where there's all these warning alarm bells going off. And they're kind of being ignored at the moment. I mean, you can't ignore a 92% drop in the share price in a company that's been jacked up by $1 billion not long ago.
Right.
You've got to wonder. It's almost like, you're trying to give somebody CPR and they're not responding. You know what I mean?
All right. Okay. Julian, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
20 past 12. David's on now. Hello, David.
Hi, Andy. I did go to the MLCs this morning. I was quite interested. I was the only one in the public gallery, surprisingly. But I was enthralled by what they were debating. It was to do with some charities and an issue on that, but I wasn't going to talk about that today. I was going to say, I sent you a poster there, and on the 4th of November, PC Rachel Grant is going to be engaging with Onchan ratepayers and people who live in and around Onchan.
The constabulary is back in Onchan then?
They're coming back. We don't know whether they put the flags up or not, or is this just... I'm not going to try and panic anybody. I don't think there's any big issues happening in Onchan, but maybe the chief constable has realised, or his officers, senior officers, have realised that Onchan is quite a big place and things do happen. But my appeal, I'm going to write to PC Grant and say to her, never mind coming on a Tuesday, you need to get involved with the community that's coming to football matches, the schools, pensioners club, the WIs, TGs that's in Onchan as well, all those little organisations as well as the commissioners. But if anybody has any issues coming on the 4th, then, which is always going to be on a Tuesday, I believe, you can go in there and have a quiet word and say, if you've got a beef, it could be where people are parking heavy goods vehicles. Well, you know what it's like in Onken down near the park there. And we've still got some up at a major place up near there where the Majestic used to be. I mean, there's one guy there, I can't believe he's got about 16 vehicles between the highway and his property.
I thought, I mean, when I went to see that's on Howe Road, there's a guy there with umpteen number of cars. I thought he was selling them, but apparently they're all his. He just keeps them.
He just keeps them. And I'm not spying on them, like, but I
feel... Well, it's difficult not to see it. If anybody lives on Howe Road or Drive, you can see this thing. There's tons of cars there.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that they're worth a fortune, as people would have antique cars. There's a few that looks okay. But it's just, I don't know. The fella's becoming antisocial to the neighbours round about, so maybe that's something the police will get involved in and then be a community bobby, because we don't have that anymore, do we, on the island?
I'm trying to remember. Where was the police house in Onken?
Back of the co-op there. Which the commissioners purchased it and turned it into apartments. There's
right.
Five apartments there, I think, off the top of my head. So it was a win for the community. But the loss was when we lost the police station and a direct contact, and when the police then decided not to come to the commissioner's office anymore, we really lost the community involvement, where people can have... Sometimes people get stressed out on some of the... Could even be minor things like large camper vans parking outside their windows, blocking in the light. And some of them, and I've been around Onken quite a lot there. There are a few of them there, and I wouldn't give you £200 for some of them.
It'll be interesting to see what Rachel Grant has to say, and you know what the approach is going to be in the future. Because I know certainly if the chief constable's listening, he'll roll his eyes. But everybody loves to see bobbies on the beat. Everybody likes to see them. Apart from the criminals, of course, they're not too keen on that. But most people are more than happy to see a uniformed constable on the beat.
Yeah, and getting involved. And then the community knows who the person is, whether it's a PC, or they'll see somebody. And the community will say, oh, my God, I seen a policeman the other day. What's going on in Onken? Do you know what I mean? But hopefully it'll be, I want her to get involved in the community. Two big schools, three big schools as such, Ashley Hill, Onken School, and then Bemmerhage is the biggest school up near Signpost Corner there. Lots of kids that are going to that particular school, and they've probably never seen a policeman either.
Interesting. That's interesting, because at one time police did go into schools for road safety, didn't they?
They did. And I always remember in my time there, they actually did... they had some... where a kid some years ago now died in a car crash. And there was the car was available for inspection. They didn't drag it around, but they had videos of it and stuff like that. But it points out to them, you've got to educate, haven't you, the next generation coming forward, things not to do, never mind vaping or smoking, and drinking in moderation.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
See ya.
Good to hear from you. A note in from a disillusioned GARF ratepayer who says, Andy, I was pleased to see GARF commissioners are buying the old Prince's Garage site on the Douglas Bend in Laxey, but was astonished at the price. Is it £850k for a site that's extra vehicular, so will be full of contaminants in the soil? It looks like it's also got a corrugated roof, which, is it made of asbestos? We don't know. So clearing the site's going to be a fortune on the GARF ratepayer. And that's before you start the build, even if it cost half of what Victoria Road Summerhill Costa built it, going to be run millions to build a sheltered housing unit there before GAF commissioners say they've got a loan over 37 years. How much is it going to be? Because it's bound to come back on the ratepayers in GAF, just like the roundhouse went back to the ratepayers in Braddon. The rate nearly doubled in Braddon because the roundhouse just went phenomenally over budget. That may have been COVID, of course. As long as GAF commissioners don't put a penny on the rates for it, great, but we've had one of the biggest rate increases already in GAF. I can't see us not paying a fortune for it like Braddon did for theirs. That's certainly a story we'll keep our eye on, the that old Prince's Garage site on the Douglas Bend in Laxey. This is the proposed new sheltered housing project on the former Prince's Motors site. Split costings for the sheltered and commissioner's office portions have been supplied by Dandara and are going to be scrutinised by the department and the quantity surveyor acting for the commissioners. That's from the GAF publicly available minutes there. Going back to this local government amendment bill and the one that Mr. Harmer introduced when he was in government, which has now been, an amendment from Laurie Hooper allows new functions to be imposed without extra funding on the local authorities. The former DOI minister, Chris Thomas, has called the bill a mess, and he's urged local authorities to share their views. Now, this afternoon, the local authorities will be with the LegCo, and the hearing will take evidence from all local authorities before LegCo, and then LegCo will decide whether to send the bill back to Timbald. Mr. Harmer, of course, now in Peel Commissioner, says the legislation gives the Department of Infrastructure a blank cheque to change what local authorities do with no extra money to cover new duties.
Well, the Local Government Amendment Act in its original format was more of a tidying up sort of exercise, around expenses and things like that. It was some bits that hadn't been done. It was never intended as a root and branch local government reform. It was really to put to bed some of those sort of niggling issues over time. But obviously, since then, it's now grown in something much more than it was ever intended.
Why are all of the local authorities, if not all, then the vast majority, so unhappy with the bill?
It's really one of the backbench amendments, so not part of the core bill, but seem to be taken as part of the core bill. And it's all about the fact that it basically gives a complete blank check, blank piece of paper to modify local authorities and what they do and how much it costs. Really a stroke of a pen, really, just a Timbald approval, rather than having to go through the proper work of legislation and consultation and working out what's best. So it will create very much knee-jerk reactions. Now, my understanding is this was all about how Northern Civic Community site fell apart and how the responsibilities were distributed and payment for it. But I believe that's resolved. And it's a bit like trying to solve the wrong problem. So what this allows government to do is really put a new set of requirements, new set of rules on local authorities. And then, as well as that, the potential to actually charge or put a cost onto local authorities without any real consultation. As I said before, it won't need a new act or anything like that. It will just need Timbald approval.
Well, we'll see, because the local authorities are meeting LegCo, members of LegCo, this afternoon. Gary dropped a note in. Jersey government says that Jersey Telecom is a strategic asset. Alabang government says nothing as it oversees asset stripping and decline of the Isle of Man. These are Gary's words, by the way. Asset stripping and decline of the Isle of Man. Millions will go from the Isle of Man to Jersey and Guernsey in profits made from banking, energy and telecommunications. Too late for Cura to do consultations regarding broadband when Jersey will determine what will happen here. Well, Cura can decide. Cura is the regulator, Gary. And the companies have to do what Cura says. Cura is the regulator, Communications and Utilities Regulatory Authority. Point taken, though. Of course, Manx Gas, Isle of Man Energy as it is now, is although it's on the Isle of Man, it's owned elsewhere. Manx Telecom is owned elsewhere. We don't quite know what the get-together is between Jersey Telecom and the owners of Manx Telecom, Basalt, the private equity. What we do know is we shelled over £10 million for fibre to be distributed. And presumably, Manx Telecom own all the infrastructure. All the infrastructure. Ian dropped a note in and said, the Isle of Man's got its own territorial waters. And we're just thinking about various sailings in and out of Manx waters. On the steam packet, the bar's always closed while the vessel is in Manx waters. According to the steam packet website, due to licensing restrictions, the sale of alcoholic beverages is only permitted outside the Isle of Man's territorial waters. I gather this is because the steam packet holds a UK license for the sale of alcohol, but not a Manx license. So, can anybody answer this? If the Stena ship between Belfast and Birkenhead passes through Manx waters, or indeed a cruise ship is in Douglas Bay, are they breaking Manx law if they keep their bar open? So if those cruise ships are in the bay, and obviously well within Manx waters, if they open their bar, are they breaking the law? The advocates will be scrambling for the legislation.
Hello, this is Doug Farragher. In conjunction with Manx Radio, I'd like to invite you to join us and learn something about our native Gaelic tongue, the language of man.
November is Will Writing Month, and Callan Wild has teamed up with Sight Matters to make a real difference. In November, you can have your will professionally written at a reduced rate, with a single will £200 plus VAT and a joint will £300 plus VAT, with £100 going directly to support the work of Sight Matters. It's a simple way to plan for the future while helping others today. Call Callan Wild on 623 195 and claim your will writing with Sight Matters.
A big thank you to your workmen. They've done a very good job. My property looks like new again. Thank you, EPS.
We're delighted with the house. Your employees obviously take great pride in their work.
The work was done promptly, professionally and considerately.
EPS, transforming properties island-wide with the revolutionary Protex wall covering system. Guaranteed for 10 years. Call 627 191 and book now for spring and get 10% off.
A good job. Well done.
Mrs. Claus here. As Santa's busy, I'm going to decorate the grotto ready for Christmas. And I hear that Ramsay Garden Centre is full of festive goodies, decorations, lights, gifts, even Christmas trees. Ramsay Garden Centre opens 7 days a week on Albert Road.
Remember, remember, Douglas Fireworks on the 5th of November. This year's fireworks display in Douglas will be even bigger and better than ever with new sponsor Grant Thornton Isle of Man. The fun all kicks off at 6:15 p.m. on the promenade with the best Eco Guy competition. But please ensure all guys are registered by 6 p.m. Then at 6:30 p.m, the spectacular fireworks display will light up Douglas Bay for yet another stunning show over the water. Douglas Fireworks, Wednesday, November the 5th. Sponsored by Grant Thornton Isle of Man and supported by Manx Radio.
The latest edition of Manx Radio's Breath Mindfulness podcast with Karen Hardman is available now.
Let relaxation take over, and any plans, projects or conversations, just place them on hold.
Brought to you by the Good Health Store on Station Road in Port Erin.
The narrow road steepens and twists to eventually reveal glistening sea and a glorious sun-trapped secret cove.
Shine and connect.
Vitamin-rich sea air relaxes you and freshens your skin.
The latest in the Breath Mindfulness series with Karen Hardman and available now at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
I thought the headland at Onchan wasn't nice and wasn't beautiful. We were talking yesterday, Adam called yesterday and said he thought that the House Drake headland was going to be despoiled by building a millionaire's mansion there. Well, it is a private land, of course. It was overgrown there and accessible to the public. It will look better than it did. than it did whenever whatever is built is built, says Ali. We got there eventually. And a note in from Desmond, who said, I think we should all just build mud huts for us and the animals to live in. Okay. Easier to get a doctor's appointment? I don't think so. This is 883. I rang on Monday morning as I needed a doctor's note for work. Couldn't get an appointment till Friday. Phone appointment phoned on Friday, only to be told can't backdate a doctor's note. So absolutely no point in the phone call. I did explain on the Monday what it was for, says 883. Can he not backdate that? This is a prime example of why local government shouldn't have a blank cheque. Garth commissioners have bought the Princess Motors site and will develop it. And in doing so, will they exhaust all their finances at the cost to Garth ratepayers? Here we go again. Well, they presumably know what they're at in Garth. I believe that as long as any ship has a designated official, they can open their bar on board. Steam Packet don't have a designated official for various reasons. That's Dewan715. Is that the reason they don't open the bar on the Steam Packet? Thank you thanks for that photo about Onchan Park. I'll get to that in just a few moments' time. The Isle of Man needs its own version of Trump or Farage. Oh, dear me. Says 85. Who are they, by the way? Oh, they're off the Isle of Man. Sorry, it doesn't really exist then, does it? We should get the gas fields up and running. This is 854. Doesn't seem like we are at the moment, so we can talk about it all we want, but the government simply don't seem minded to use the national gas field. Hello from John Lennon Airport. I asked about the minimum wage. How many government workers are on a minimum wage? And how much is the increase going to cost Treasury for the uplift? Are there any government workers, actual government workers, on the minimum wage? And will they be impacted by the erosion of differentials? And what's it going to cost to maintain them? Another message in said the wage claim, the 3.3% settlement that Unite rejected, how much do they actually want? And remember the plans for solar panels? This is Tom, who said solar panels on government buildings. Manx Utilities confirms everything is on schedule. By 2026, the Isle of Man will see 40 megawatts of renewable energy solar panels on sites like the NSC, Nobles Hospital and the Sea Terminal. Is the project on target for completion by 2026? I don't think it's by 2026, because 2026 starts in about 9 weeks' time. So I don't think that's going to happen. Don't know whether it's going to be before the end of 2026. But we'll find out where the solar panels and which government buildings the solar panels are going to go on. And that'll be a lot more power going into the system, won't it? Manx Telecom and Jersey Telecom have agreed a merger they say will create the largest full-service telecom provider across the Crown dependency. Christine said, you've been talking about the merging. What are the terms of the merger and how is this going to affect us? Well, the two companies plan to combine their operations across the Isle of Man, Jersey, Guernsey and internationally. They say the merger will strengthen digital infrastructure and accelerate investment in areas like fibre broadband. We just paid $10 million for that. 5G and managed digital services. But Shaw have said they're going to do 5G, didn't they? Anyway, Manx Radio first revealed the background discussions were taking place in November last year and again in June of this year, though at the time both companies dismissed them as speculative and unverified. It's the Isle of Man. Everybody knew. We don't know the exact cost of the merger, but it's reported to be worth more than £500 million, £500 million, if historical figures that were floated are to be believed. The merger still needs regulatory approval, the aforementioned CURA, before it can go ahead. No timetable has been given as yet, but both companies say the move will position them to deliver faster connectivity and stronger network resilience across the Isle of Man. And the islands in general. No doubt the question on your mind is if this will affect the cost. Unfortunately, we don't know yet. We do know one thing, that about a week before it was announced, it was suddenly announced that if you wanted a Manxnet web address, you had to pay £65 for it. So that's one thing we do know about the cost. Some people argue that climate change is a fact because scientists say so. Mr. Al Gore, Greta Thunberg and others have previously claimed that due to climate change, we would all be starving, burned up or in an ice age by now. This is Gary's words. Now, eminent scientists in their field claim that by 2030, many jobs will become redundant due to artificial intelligence. And that by 2045, the development of superintelligence may threaten the continued existence of mankind, particularly if it determines the removal of human influence is necessary to save the climate. So the robots will be in charge. They'll do all the digging. So if we're accepting things because scientists say so, there seems to be no point in wasting taxpayer money on green initiatives when everything could be over before 2050. Let's have a climate referendum. Well, we're waiting for Mr. Peters to introduce that and see what the MHKs have to say, whether or not there should be a climate referendum. Remember, it was, I mean, it changes all. It was an emergency, wasn't it? It was an emergency, then it was a crisis. It was climate change, global warming. What is it this week? Well, I know what it is. It's a bill, isn't it? It will give us a bill. We don't really know, do we, what's going to happen in the future. Back in the 1970s, we were all going to be swimming in pollution, but then they cured the pollution. The ozone layer was going to disappear and we were all going to be burnt to a crisp, and that came back. Then they said planes would fall out of the sky and everything would stop. Hospitals couldn't work because of the millennium bug. And that was okay. So it would be nice to know what is going to happen in the future and really how much it's going to cost. Well, we know full well we'll have to pay for it, but how much is it really going to cost? Did you know, says 223, the minimum pay rise affects the government. A lot of their staff will get pay rises because of the banding system. But I've been told, says 223, that those on higher wage bands are demanding a pay rise to maintain the wage gap, the differential. The higher earners are saying that by narrowing the wage gap, it doesn't encourage staff to skill up to the higher bands. They're saying it's not worth the hassle, says 223. So putting up the minimum wage will affect the government wage bill, will erode differentials, and could then lead to another claim for all people who are better off. Michael's on now. Hello, Michael.
Yeah, hi. I'm just ringing up about the Western Civic Amenity site and how it's being run.
Yeah.
I've been writing to the commissioners of Patrick, Claire Cope, John Anderson and others, and they won't answer emails, nor will they. They have the authority to actually have these sheds reopened. One of the commissioners actually said to me that it's likely to be opened by November. And when I questioned him on it, he said, I don't recall saying it. Now, the sheds were meant to be opened by July 2025, after they were shut in March 2025, approximately. It never happened. Then they were going to be reopened by September 2025, as far as I recall. It's never happened. Then November 2025, they might reopen. It's never happened. The way I see it is it won't happen. Now, what I used to do was I used to go to the amenity site and pick up some electrical items that I could repair. I passed degrees on electronics. And what I used to do was I repaired a television set for a care home so that the elderly people could watch them completely free of charge. I repaired items that I sometimes gave away to pensioners who couldn't afford them. And then suddenly in January 2025, I was met with, I can't take a thing. And it's upsetting. It's a hobby. Now, this part of what I'm about to say may, it's a little disturbing. I'm not saying it because I want people to feel sorry for me, but I'm a cancer patient on chemotherapy every 2 weeks. Now, some of these items that I used to love repairing while I'm not very well at home helped me, and now I can't take anything. And I've written to the Western Civic Amenity Site Manager, Chris Ford, and others, and commissioners and MHKs, and not a single reply every single day that I've written. And it's an absolute disgrace that these sheds are shut. There's waste, there's items being thrown into skips that people, the poor people, can use that are not, that they're just being destroyed and burned at a cost to the ratepayers.
When you say, Michael, that you repaired electrical items, I suppose nowadays we're all led to believe that if something breaks down, you just lob it into the skip. So can stuff be actually mended these days?
Oh, yeah, I can. I mean, I can't mend everything, but I have fixed microwave ovens before. I've fixed television sets. I've repaired computers, generally various small items, and even children's toys. I've repaired the odd one, a few of those, and put them into the amenity site shed so that the children can come in with mum and dad and use them to play with. Now, what really disgusted me was in February of 2025, the people being charged for these electrical items were attending the site and putting items under the shed. I'm not sure whether they worked or not, but most of them probably did, because most people have common sense to realise that people can reuse them. A post was put on Facebook, Western Civic Amenity Site group, that stated, and this sounded more like a bullying tactic to me, "We will shut the sheds. Pay the fee." As if, I mean, that statement actually personally upset me. The people of the Isle of Man should not be paying these fees in the first place, because they've already paid for them at the point of when they bought the item at the retailers, such as a microwave oven. Say, imagine it was £80 or something. You've already paid £10 on that microwave oven to be disposed of in the first place, and it's up to the Manx government to contact DEFRA in the UK to request some of these costs back. Now, the Isle of Man government has been blaming DEFRA for all of this, and it's a complete lie, because DEFRA wrote back to me and said, "We're not responsible," well, this is paraphrased, "we're not responsible for these charges. You need to take this up with the Isle of Man government." Well, right. I've been doing that. Well, I've not been too well for the last year. I've just hit an absolute brick wall. The excuses that I've been given as to why these sheds are shut are, the incinerator needs more material to burn. It's a hell of a job to get it restarted if it goes out. What's the second and third one? The third one is, sorry, I'm trying to remember what the other excuses are. Something about health and safety.
Right.
The executive at Health and Safety, DEFRA headquarters, are sort of like telling people what they can and cannot do. There is another one.
Just to confirm what you said, this has been mentioned before, the fact that when you buy white goods, built into the price is a recycling fee that in the EU, that just marries up to a barcode and it's taken away free over there. So we're paying for it here, but we're not getting that service.
No, we're not. And they use the excuse that we don't have a wee recycling facility over here. I know we don't, but the system is that the Manx government is not, and MHKs will not actually write to DEFRA and say, you know, like, "Dear DEFRA, we on the Isle of Man have already paid for these recycling charges. We request that we receive some sort of payment back." Instead of this Isle of Man government appointing its own contractor to charge the Manx public. You want to see it when people go to the amenity sites, they're queuing up outside like cash cows, paying with their debit and credit card, and it looks absolutely foolish to me on the outside.
Okay. All right, Michael. We appreciate you bringing this up as well. And all the very best as far as your health is concerned. We'll continue to watch this. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Thank you very much.
All right, 10 to 1.
As the hot air balloon lifted off, Ellie's financial future rose too. Secure, steady and full of possibility. Thanks to Skipton Guernsey and their fixed 4.1% AER saving rate until September the 1st, 2026 on deposits of £10,000 or more. Let your money soar with confidence. Join Ellie and secure your rate today at Skipton.
For details on Skipton's savings products, call 01481 730 730 or visit skiptoninternational.com. No withdrawals allowed until maturity. Interest paid annually and upon maturity. Skipton International is licensed to take deposits by the GFSC and is a participant in the Guernsey Banking Deposit Compensation Scheme. See dcs.gg.
I love to drive.
Drive smarter. Drive more reliable. Drive a great deal at Man in Motors. With a superb range of cars for every budget, always available. And if we don't have it, we'll source it. Plus, servicing, valeting and prestige detailing too. Man in Motors. Richmond Hill, Douglas. Find us on Facebook or call 420-420. That's 420-420. Drive a better bargain at Man in Motors.
Flu season is here, but never fear. So is the chance to protect yourself. Whether you qualify for a free NHS flu jab or would like a private vaccination for just £20, Kingsley Mooty has made it quick and easy to get protected. Visit Kingsley Mooty on Facebook or call 625-040. Get your flu jab today with Kingsley Mooty.
There's something strange happening down at Silverdale Glen, Ballasalla. The Silverdale Cafe Halloween Hunt. Join the hunt today and answer 6 spooky questions to 6 spooky clues for the chance to be one of 9 daily winners of a Silverdale Spooktacular goodie bag, brimming with spookalicious sweets and treats and a mystery prize to be used at Silverdale Cafe Ballasalla. The Silverdale Cafe Halloween Hunt. Don't miss it.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Andy, Gary's telling us now the reason the ozone layer reduced was because CFCs were banned. People believe the scientists and did something about it. That's the reason that happened. A message in that just says, humans building robots to take their jobs. You couldn't make that up, could you? Well, you could. It wouldn't surprise me, says 078, if Jersey Telecom are bought out by a multi-millionaire Chinese state-owned company. And thereby, we will become like London with all of its telecommunications infrastructure owned by the Chinese telecoms. Think of the consequences. There will be colossal detrimental effects to our national interests and values. Is this true? Can somebody do something about it? Well, the thing about Jersey Telecom is it's owned by the states of Jersey. It's owned by the government. So they can, of course, the states of Jersey are elected by the citizens of Jersey. So they, whereas we, at the moment, our telecom is owned by Basalt, and Shaw is owned by the Shah of Bahrain, is it? I want to know when we're going to get a real expert who knows what they're talking about, says Deadman. A real expert. How do you define a real expert?
When the Man in Line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
Every decade, they say we're doomed. And the only thing that happens is that taxes go up. So wake up. They're hoping that we're too stupid to never get wise to their game. First of all, it was the nuclear bomb back in the 1950s, remember? Nuclear, we're all going to die in nuclear war. Then it was pollution. Then it was global warming. Then it was global heating or global freezing. It just happens all the time. Who knows? You just never know that. you can cry wolf, Tom, too much. The debate around telecom and their merger is only going to result in one thing, says 466, and that is, we found out from the introduction of the annual charge for just having an email address, we are all going to pay more for what is at best an average service. Is it not about time our lacklustre government allowed other UK operators to come in and give us at least a choice rather than a monopoly. The thing, he said, now for gas and electricity, because in a lot of cases, they're no longer Manx-based. Well, I mean, two things are certain. Electricity is Manx-based because we generate the stuff here. It's Manx utilities. Water, it's our water, it's our infrastructure, Manx utilities. It's the old MEA and the water board together. Gas, telecoms, well, our infrastructure. Well, please talk about the new buses. The government should stop giving passengers a 7-star service. I would do an FOI on that department. It was quite easy. You just ask for an FOI. Easy. How do you rip off employers with an easy life minimum wage, put an age group on an entitlement of perhaps the amount of hours and an age of 25 and up. Young teenagers living at home don't need large amounts of money, says FOI 382. Thank you for that. And thank you, Pam. She said, what on earth is going on at Bishop's Court? Well, they're taking down a dangerous dead tree that's got Dutch elm disease. So it's closed till 3:30 today and tomorrow 9:30 to 3:30 from Bishop's Court Glen entrance to the northern end of Orisdale Road. During the closure times, no access to Orisdale from the junction with the Bollen Road for southbound traffic. Get it? Thanks to Howie on the phones today.